And good morning. Hello, this is Dr. Roy Morgan. Welcome to Health Essentials on this beautiful Saturday morning. There's only a few more dog days of summer left. Well, maybe more than a few. There is a verse in Proverbs chapter 17, verse 22. A merry heart doeth good like a medicine, but a broken spirit drieth the bones. Is that true? Is that accurate? Do you believe that through faith? I do. Doctors finally diagnosed why Norman was in so much agony. Agony that rendered him virtually incapable of lying down. He couldn't rest. He couldn't turn over without resorting to painkillers. Have you ever been in a situation like that where you couldn't even turn over in bed without just gut-wrenching pain? Let alone he couldn't stand up and he couldn't move about without terrible pain. Doctors had diagnosed him with ankylosing spondylitis, an incurable degenerative rheumatic disease that inflames and stiffens the joints and the spinal cord and the thorax. It can be in the neck, it can be in the lower pelvic area, but it's just basically your immune system attacks the bones and the joints, and your spine fuses together. When I was in school, we called this bamboo spine. Very interesting. Anyway, Norman had, according to the best medical estimates, about 3 months left to live. Get your affairs in order, his physicians advised. Chemotherapy and radiation treatments were the doctor's orders, but Norman rejected that advice. He had several other obvious options, but he chose none of them. He didn't turn to drinking. He didn't start partying and carousing in a last-ditch effort to live life to the fullest. Nor did he lapse into, here we go, page two, into a deep depression and resign himself to his diagnosed fate. We're talking about Norman Cousins, the esteemed longtime editor of the prestigious Saturday Review and author of Anatomy of an Illness, who beat the odds and overcame an incurable illness with apparently not much more than a bunch of belly laughs. Cousins was diagnosed and handed his 3-month death sentence in 1964 at the age of 39. After reading Hans Selye's groundbreaking research linking stress to health, he decided to go for broke and test the long-held Reader's Digest proposition that laughter really is the best medicine. He began a daily diet of Marx Brothers movies, Three Stooges shorts, and episodes of Canned to Camera. Now, he also did take a lot of vitamin C. You might find that interesting. After just 10 minutes of laughing himself silly, Cousins soon noticed that he could sleep without pain and without the need for medication for up to 2 hours. Even the doctors noted that after a hearty laugh, inflammation in Cousins' body, for reasons they could not explain, lessened. So the 3-month deadline came and went. Cousins did not die. After the daily chuckle fest continued for the next 3 months, the Saturday Review editor was still both alive and well. Ankylosing spondylitis was no longer ravaging his body. The disease had remitted entirely. More than a decade later, in 1979, the still healthy Cousins recounted his ordeal and his recovery in the book Anatomy of an Illness. He also became an adjunct professor in the Department of Behavioral Medicine at the University of California, Los Angeles School of Medicine, where he established a humor task force to promote and coordinate research into laughter's impact on health. Later, UCLA's AIDS Institute created the Norman Cousins Program in Psychoneuroimmunology to fund both... Oh, that's too much research. Anyway, Cousins remained an advocate of mind-body medicine for the rest of his life. He had his last laugh in 1990 when he died at the ripe age of 75. Could Cousin's remission have been completely unrelated to his humor therapy? Of course it can. Diseases remit spontaneously all the time for reasons unknown. Cousins was just one man, and his chronicles in no way, shape, form, or fashion represent a scientifically conducted experiment. But then again, if somebody tells me they have a great result from doing something, I think I'd like to sit up and pay attention and take notice. Just like a lady told me this week that she told me the next time somebody calls me and says they have arthritis of the hands, well, it could just be just as simple as wearing rubber gloves and not coming in contact with dishwashing detergent. So that's been her solution. So you see there, Betty, I did mention your remedy. Wear rubber gloves when you wash dishes by hand. That is, if you have arthritis. She said it cured hers. All right. A little bit of research here. I think this is interesting. This is good. This is good for all of us. All right. Consider the Houston orthopedic surgeon who took up the cases of 10 candidates for arthroscopic knee surgery. On 5 of the participants, he performed the actual procedure. On the other 5 willing subjects, he simply pretended to perform surgery by making just 3 simple superficial incisions. After 6 months, all 10 of his patients felt a substantial reduction in knee pain. Of course, I'm not trying to make this cover every knee condition. Every so often, someone will show me their x-rays, and there's absolutely no cartilage between the knees. It's absolutely bone rubbing on bones, and it's horrible. And those are probably people that are good candidates for knee replacement surgery or a knee replacement. So I have a lot of respect for physicians that do that, because they're actually trying to give people a high quality of life. And you know what? Life is not fair. Some people, they have rotten knees when they're very, very young, and some people it's toward the end that their knee kind of plays out. Anyway, but in this particular study, all 10 patients felt substantially better. They had a lot less knee pain. In Seattle, a cardiologist operated on a group of people with chest pains that had angina pectoris. That's just a diagnosis of chest pain. 90% felt fewer chest pains upon exertion after they had the surgery. For another group of people with angina or chest pain, the cardiologist told them that he would operate, but he just merely made superficial chest incisions, and he immediately sutured them up. Afterward, 90% of the people with the sham surgery, all of whom knew they were part of a study, said that they experienced fewer chest pains. Okay. Study number 3. A British physician studied the minds, and the body's potential for self-healing among 200 people that had non-specific, non-serious conditions. To half of the people, he offered diagnoses and told them that they would be better in a few days. So he gave them a prognosis. You'll be better in a few days, after he told them exactly what it was. To the others, he said that he did not know why they felt ill, and he could not predict when their symptoms would clear. That means he gave them no prognosis and no diagnosis. 2 weeks later, 64% of those in the first group who were reassured and comforted and had recovered from their maladies, 64%. In contrast, only 39% of the people left hanging for a prognosis had felt better. You tell me, 64% better or 39%? Yeah. See, there's power in knowing. And then there's a study conducted by researcher F.J. Evans involving hospital patients who were in sufficiently great pain to warrant injections of morphine, which is a powerful opium-derived narcotic. Now you tell me, if you have ever heard of an individual that was so desperate for pain relief that they said, "Give me morphine," pretty dire situation, right? Okay. So he these were hospital patients. Obviously, they weren't in a great situation. Pretty dire. All of these people were told they would receive the drug, but morphine was only administered to some of them. The others received a placebo containing no pain-relieving potential whatsoever. It was just a placebo or a sham drug. It had an inert substance. So, those injected with the inert substance enjoyed a 56% of the pain relief of those who received actual morphine. Now, what causes that, folks? I think I saw, let me just say this week at the office. I saw, let me say it differently. There was an individual who feels like the last 20 years of their life have just been one abysmal failure after the other. And there's not much hope for them. And they feel trapped. And if I make a request that they try something very, very simple, easy, and doable, at least I think it's easy and doable, it may not be for them, which that's legitimate, they feel like that's nearly impossible and they can't. And I think the words I heard out of their mouth were, I can't, I can't, I can't, that's impossible, I can't. But then again, I saw another individual that felt like, this is really what I want to accomplish, this is my goal. I've written it down on a sheet of paper. I want to accomplish X, Y, Z, or A, B, C. And this is my motivation behind it. And, of course, one of the motivations was, with the job that I have, I need to really be very hardy. I need to be able to deal with stress and lots of it. And I can't afford to have my body break down. And maybe number two, because I love and care for my family, I'm very, very motivated to have my body in good health. So this is what I'm working for. And so we have a tale of two different objectives. One saying I can't, one saying I will not quit under any circumstances to heal my body. Anyway, very interesting. Of course, I can tell you right now, the one that had the refusal to quit and to give up just because there was pain and suffering is the one that completely achieved their goals. Now, let me share this with you right here. This comes from a, I think it's a book. Anyway, Why Endorphins and Exercise Make You Happy by Kristen Domoniel. I hope I'm saying her name correctly. Since their discovery in the 1970s, endorphins have been credited with post-exercise buzz experienced by people who exercise regularly, meaning they feel better after they exercise. Have you ever felt that way before? I don't feel like exercising. I don't want to get up. But if you make yourself do it, you can ask yourself 20 minutes later, do I actually feel better now than what I did before I did this? Now researchers are finding that there's much more going on behind the scenes. Endorphins, which are very similar in structure to morphine, are considered natural painkillers because they activate opioid receptors in the brain that help minimize discomfort. They can also help bring about feelings of euphoria and general well-being, like, oh, everything's going well. Endorphins are also involved in natural reward circuits related to activities such as feeding, drinking, intimate activity, that's what I'll say, you know what I mean, and maternal behavior. You tell me, have you ever seen a young mother with a brand new baby? I'm telling you, it's a thing of beauty. All this is explained by sports and exercise psychologist Kip Matthews, PhD. When you exercise, your brain increases production of the neurotransmitters serotonin and norepinephrine, which in turn send messages throughout your nervous system. These messages might be the chemical equivalent of saying something like, you're running and this is awesome, you're doing great, keep it up. Exercise not only leads to an increase in serotonin and norepinephrine, which may in turn reduce depression and stress, it also may help ward off depression and anxiety by enhancing the body's ability to respond to stressors. So go for a long walk, head out for a run, or go to the gym. The emotional benefits will keep you coming back. If you'd like to join me on the air, I just realize I'm into this 15, 16 minutes. There is a phone line open, and you're welcome to call with a question of any kind. Of course, I can tell you what the love of my life is. I mean, when it comes to work and profession and purpose. Oh, that would be remedies that promote healing and well-being and strengthening of the human body. If you have an organ that is really working in a subpar fashion, it's not working near as well as it should, maybe the organ is very stressed for lots of reasons. Could you imagine a person that's addicted to, let's just say, alcohol, and they have a fatty liver because of the excessive alcohol consumption, and they are depleted of nutrients? By the way, I've seen plenty of winos, you know, laying in a gutter in Dallas before that had full heads of hair. So, and you know full well, they're living off alcohol. If they eat anything, it would be probably fast food and junk food. Junk food is not really what you consider nutrient-dense food, right? Okay. Anyway, just thought I'd get that out of the way. You can tell I'm venting, can't you? If you'd like to join me on the radio, there's a phone line open at 903-586-5257. Do you think it makes a difference if you have a purpose in your life? Of course it does. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
How are you?
I'm doing really well, thank you.
All right.
But if I was doing better, I'd be better. So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. One, I have like a sleep apnea problem, and I don't seem to get good restful sleep. And my eyes have been red for months. Do you know anything I can do for that?
All right, let me just try to make it very, very simple. Number one, there's two or three things that I'll try just very simply to see if it leads to a tremendous change in sleep apnea.
Okay.
And you're just going to have to let me say this, and you ask whatever follow-up questions that you want. But if I had to choose one substance that by far and away creates the most problems when it comes to sleep apnea, it would have to be consumption of white refined sugar. Or if it's not white refined sugar, sometimes it can just be as simple as all the grains and the carbohydrates that we consume. So if you've ever taken a look at the United States Department of Agriculture food pyramid, they recommend between 6 to 11 servings of grains a day. You ever seen a food pyramid before?
Oh, yeah.
All right. So that's not sugar, but it might as well be because it converts so easily. So sometimes the simple experiment that I will try is just to tell people to focus on eating vegetables and meat. Now, whether it's white refined sugar, high fructose corn syrup, brown sugar, that's still refined anyway.
What about honey?
Well, and that's still going to be, that still can affect people that have poor sleep in some cases.
Okay.
So whether,
curious.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. Whether it's any of those, what I'll say is there's going to be a huge difference between the type of carbohydrates that are found in green vegetables. So sometimes I'll have a person either eat coleslaw for supper, minus the sugar, of course,
yeah,
or I'll have them eat sautéed cabbage. You know, a guy asked me this week, he said, what if I put some sausage in the cabbage and just saute that with an onion and bell pepper and butter? I'm saying perfect. Let me
know. Wouldn't that be beautiful?
Yeah, you would take that for supper, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, what if a beautiful woman served it to you with a smile on her face? Would that make it even better?
At this point, I'd take an ugly woman with
okay.
a smile on her face.
So if you just gave it a concerted effort of not consuming any... Yeah, let me go backwards for a second. I ask people questions all day long, and sometimes I ask them, all right, you tried this for a few days, did it make any difference? And they sometimes say, no, didn't make any difference whatsoever. And I have other people tell me something totally different. They'll say, you know what? It's almost as if my body functions so much better when I tried this. And it really responded in a few days. And I feel emotionally better because of it. So I feel like I'm starting to figure out what's optimal for my body. But if you were to eat salads and greens and broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, green beans, avocados, squash, zucchini, onions, lettuce of any kind, asparagus, I guess I could keep going, but that's probably plenty of stuff.
Yeah.
All those things are relatively low in carbohydrates, maybe with the exception of avocados. But I would say avocados are just very nutrient-dense, meaning they've got a bunch of good things in them, and those are the nutrients that actually heal and repair your body. So if you tried that meat, you could tell me if your sleep improves. If it does, then we've solved part of the mystery. Now, okay. there was a study done, can I say 10 years ago? Because I don't exactly remember. It might have been in 2006 or 2007 or 2005. It doesn't matter. But they took a group of men, and it wasn't a large study, so there wasn't a lot of physicians that read it said, you know, we just don't think there were enough people to even think this is very valid. But I think they started out with about 38 or 39 men. There were no women in the study. They were men only.
Yeah.
And they said, would you be willing to exercise on an elliptical trainer? And I want to say it was 5 days a week for 35 minutes. Now, I'm thinking that you've got to be pretty physically fit to be on an elliptical trainer and get after it for 35 minutes. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yes.
All right. So what they did was all these men in the study, in order to be in the study, they had to have sleep apnea, or they had been diagnosed with sleep apnea. And so, if I'm not mistaken, the study was either 14 weeks or 16 weeks. Again, I'm not going to nitpick on that. But they had, I think, 8 or 9 or 10 men completely drop out of the study. They just said, you know what, I'm not doing this. This is for the birds. This is work. I've got more important things to do, like play video games and to get on Facebook. I'm just joking about those things. And so the men that completed the study, every one of them had substantial improvement when it came to sleep apnea. I'm just thinking, what would happen to your eyes if you actually got to pass out into deep, deep Neverland sleep, where you woke up and you said, wow, I think I actually slept for a change.
Yeah,
and so
it's been a while.
Well, but then again, that's when your body makes almost all the critical repairs and all the healing takes place. And so I'm sorry.
I've got one more quick question for you.
Yeah.
And that is, I'm 50 years old, overweight. I'm 260.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm going through a menopause, because I sweat. My head sweats like crazy. I sweat at work all day. But when I'm asleep, I mean, in the apartment, it's 67 degrees. I'll go to sleep and I'll wake up, my pillow is soaked, I have to flip it over, and then flip it over after a couple more hours.
I'm not trying to be negative, but what you're describing to me is you're headed for a major, major catastrophic failure in the very near future unless something gives. I realize it's not my job to bring a person down. I really want to lift you up and encourage you, but if you set your mind like Flint and said, okay, I'm going to choose through faith to believe what Dr. Morgan's saying. I'm just going to start eating salads, I'm going to eat greens, and I'm going to eat meat, but I'm going to lay off all carbohydrates, and I'm going to exercise on an elliptical trainer as if my life depends on it. So you tell me, how much weight do you want to lose? What's your goal?
My goal would be 70 pounds.
Okay, that's going to put you at a very lean, muscular, commando-like, special forces.
Yep. 190, yeah.
You'll look like a Navy SEAL. Yeah, you're going to be very, very impressive, aren't you? So what's your motivation? Why do you want to lose the weight?
Well, I want to be healthy. I'd like to go ahead and see my children grow up.
Oh, you see, there you are. That's great motivation. I like that. And you're just a young dude at 50 years of age. Let me ask you a question. Do you feel like a kid?
Really beat up and broken kid, yes.
All right. Well,
I act a lot younger than I am.
Well, and I think there's definitely pros to that. So I want you to live too. So what if you say, I'm going to exercise every single day, but I've got to find something that I can do, And there's so much information out there now, it's just ridiculous how easy it is to come up with information. So whatever you read or see that just really motivates you, I will gladly take it. But yeah, and that's what happens. As your insulin and blood sugar goes up, your testosterone always goes down. Always.
There's no way. That causes sweating?
Yep, every single time.
Yeah, because, I mean, I know, I heard you speak before about, like, fingernails having grooves in them long ways. I've got all them. And my moons are good on my thumb, but the rest of the hands are, the rest of the fingers are for the day.
Well, as you improve, you'll see those moons start to make a comeback, and you'll be very impressed. See, you'll be able to tell me a month from now that you're much stronger than what you are right now.
Well, I hope to be able to do that.
You know what? Here's the way it's going to work. You're going to lose 5 pounds a month. And since you want to lose 70 pounds, what's 5 into 70?
That'd be 14.
Okay, there you go. And if you lose 5 pounds a month, a year from now, you're going to look back and say, you know what? I am so glad I took care of myself. You know, I have a book that I looked at in my garage 2 days ago, the other morning. I was trying to look up some information about wounds and healing and such. And it was one of those old remedy books, and it was saying, what's the old-fashioned way to lose weight? And, of course, you know what they did was, they said, don't eat corn and wheat. That's what we feed animals to make them pack on the pounds. Have you ever been in the woods before and just set up like a deer feeder and put corn in it?
Me personally, but I know a lot of hunters.
Well, can I tell you what I did the other day? And, of course, it's going to sound ridiculous, all right?
Go ahead.
I put a... I think it's called Wild Game Camera. Just a very inexpensive game camera. You know, it's got the little bitty SD card in it. Anyway, so I pointed it toward the feeder just right there by the creek. And so I poured a bag of corn in the top of the feeder, and I set it to go off just once a day. And when that thing, have you ever heard those things go off? It's like corn and a clank, 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 clank.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I set up the camera and I thought, you know what, I'm going to give this 3 days. And I'm going to see what happens. So 3 days later, I went back, and, of course, you could tell that something was, like, rummaging around. I had 912 videos.
Oh, my goodness.
I was too many to go through. Of course, I was secretly hoping Sasquatch would visit the deer feeder, but he never did.
He never writes. He doesn't call.
I know. Why doesn't he? But anyway, there were like 912 videos, and I'm going, oh my word, this is ridiculous. I just had to start looking at, you know, deleting and deleting and deleting. And what? The really big hairy boars, though, the big ones, there's one big one that kept coming back. That's the only one that I could recognize. He always came at 2 and 3 in the morning, maybe 1:30. All the other ones would come at dusk, and while it was still light, like the little piglets, but the real... you know, wary boar of the forest. He would only come at like 1:30, 2 o'clock.
Yeah, the big ones are smart.
Yeah, I think so also. But I'm telling you, they just can't resist corn. And maybe fast food restaurants know this also, because every fast food restaurant is just completely based on starch, 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 and sugar, sugar, sugar. And if they don't have that, then they have things like monosodium glutamate. And they have a host of other chemicals that are designed for one purpose, to make us addicted to what they're selling. And so if a person could break those addictions, yeah, if there's a fast food restaurant that offers a salad, maybe you could try those things. And what if you had a salad dressing that was based on olive oil and vinegar, if you like those things, and you cut up avocados to add more fat? See, that's what shocks most people. It takes fat to train your body to burn fat. Anyway,
I know that I'm a big believer in using real butter.
Amen to that.
Because of listening to you. And I enjoy butter better. I mean,
good.
It's
That's what
just,
I want.
It's better for you.
Oh, absolutely. Well, please.
Well, Dr. Morgan, thank you. And I will take your advice. I hope I won't go through a sugar withdrawals, but I'm sure I will.
Well, and if you do... this is going to be one situation where no pain, no gain. You're going to suffer for, you know, a few days, but if you can tell yourself, I'll get through this. What if you set your mind like Flint that you're going to pray every time you have a sugar craving, and you cry out to God and ask Him to come to your aid and help you to be strong?
Well, the Lord does come when you call.
Amen. And you're going to be 190 before you know it.
Dr. Morgan, thank you so very much.
You're welcome. Thank you for your call. I really appreciate it. Bye-bye.
You have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
See, I started to say you'll be a gorgeous 190, but that just doesn't translate well one man to another. Okay, scratch that topic. If you want to join me on the air, there's a phone line open at 903-586-5257. All right, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Well, good morning, Dr. Morgan.
How are you?
Oh, blessed.
Good.
I was going to call you last weekend, but I was so sick. Let me regress just a second and tell you that about a month ago, I got news that my daughter is pregnant again and is coming up here to live with us. And she already has a 20-year-old, a 17-year-old, and a 15-year-old.
So there's going to be 15, 16 years between the 15-year-old and the new one?
20 years old between big sister.
Yeah, okay, I'm with you.
Oh, my gosh. Well, Dr. Morgan, this has put a lot of stress on me, and when that happens, I get explosive diarrhea.
Oh, bless your heart.
And I've lost a lot of weight. I'm out in the sun selling vegetables all the time, and it really takes its toll on me. I started drinking a little too much alcohol, and...
See, that takes courage to say stuff like that. You have my full respect. You're a brave woman. Thank you.
I need some prayer out there, Lord, please. But anyhow, I wound up going to the hospital Thursday before last. And they took a urine sample and said that I had 5 parts blood in my urine.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to put me on antibiotics right away. And I told them no.
Did you feel like you had, like, a kidney infection of some kind or bladder?
Oh, my God, Dr. Morgan. My right kidney felt like it was going to
explode.
Well,
you ever had kidney stones before?
No, sir.
Okay.
But I surely have a high susceptibility to infection because I've had double organs in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have a gallbladder or an appendix. But that's beside the point. I got to the hospital and they took the urine sample and I went on home. Well, they called me last Saturday morning when I was in such devastating pain and fever and all that, and they said that I had E. coli in my urine.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have to take that pretty seriously.
Oh God, I went and got the antibiotics and I've got to say, praise God, I feel a whole lot better today.
Oh, good. That's good news.
And plus concentrated cranberry and vitamin C, drinking lots of cranberry juice and water, laying off the alcohol as much as possible. I still like a cold beer, but I'm not overdoing it, and I'm not getting too hot out there. And I need some input on that. What else can I do? Because I know my adrenaline level was way up during that time that I had this in my kidney because I'd get up 4 or 5 times a night to go pee. And I was losing sleep. Oh, my God. I didn't sleep for almost a week or two with this.
How old is your daughter?
My daughter is 35.
So she's really not in a great situation, is she?
No, and she's obese, and she doesn't want to listen to wisdom.
That's just going to make it a lot of fun for you, isn't it?
Well, sir, I'm hoping to help change her life. I grow vegetables.
See, there, that's the spirit right there. That is the way to go. That's what you want to do. You want to be able to... I mean, you want her to follow the path of wisdom and understanding and the fear of the Lord, don't you?
Yes.
Well, see there, you're going to use your guerrilla warfare tactics. She's going to be watching you as her walking, living, breathing sermon every single day.
I know.
She's going to see your hard work and your dedication.
Yes.
Okay. We're going to use guerrilla warfare tactics, okay?
All right. That sounds wonderful.
What you're going to do is you're going to ask at the health food store who has some kefir grains for you.
Kefir grains?
Mm-hmm. And they look like small, round, milk, translucent raisins. And somebody will just give them to you. And what you're going to do is you're going to, and they'll give you the recipe on how to make this. So you're going to add your water and your sugar to them and apricot or raisins or whatever the recipe calls for. And then you're going to add, after they're cooked, after about 2 days, when I say cooked, I just mean they ferment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the cabinet, I just use those ball half-gallon mason jars you get at Walmart or wherever. Because they fit right in the cupboard. And then you're going to add a little bit of fruit juice to it.
Mm-hmm.
Very small amounts, and it's going to give it just a little bit of a flavor, but it's going to be so bubbly and so effervescent.
I heard you talking about this.
Well, what we're going to do is we're going to trick your daughter and you. Wait, I can't trick you now that you're listening. Rats! But you're going to trick your daughter into drinking this as a beverage that's going to start infusing her with beneficial bacteria.
So
what happens, and let me tell you what I'm referring to. One of the most powerful studies that I think that I've ever read before, that's, you know, I may be the only one that's impressed by this, but still, I think it's phenomenal. It comes from Poland in the year 2005. And what they did was they took about 270 plus very healthy people, and they said, could we ask a favor of you? And they said, sure. Be in our study because you're perfectly healthy and there's no flaws and you're radiant and strong. Let us get a stool specimen every quarter of the year for 5 years. And what they did was they measured the amount of good beneficial flora or bacteria. And they found at the end of 5 years, those people that were extremely strong and healthy, they harbored about 1,050 beneficial microbes. Now, flip side of the coin, they examined women that had morbid obesity. Do you know what I mean by morbid obesity?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so like
if a
woman says, Dr. Morgan, could you help shut the door on my car? And I say yes. That means I have to get a running start and hit it pretty hard to make everything fit. Does that make sense? So there's some people that are that large. And so what they did was at the end of 5 years, they said, how many beneficial species of bacteria do these women that are very overweight have? And it was about 700. So the difference would be they had 350 fewer beneficial species of good, friendly bacteria than the girls that were very strong and productive and they had major accomplishments in their life and everything was great. So they tried an experiment. So they took 17 women that were morbidly obese and they said, we have something in mind for you. And they said, well, what is it? They said, we want to see what happens when we take the bacteria from these healthy women and place it into you. And they said, well, what do you have in mind? They said, well, we want to try a technique called fecal transfer. Now, I'm not trying to gross people out, but that's just as simple. But what really impresses me the most, ma'am, is they never asked those women to change their diet or to give up junk food. They didn't give them any counseling that was spiritual in nature, which I think they should have, but they didn't. They didn't even give them any emotional support. They didn't send them to a doctor to get weight loss medications like Fen-Phen and Redux and all the different drugs that could be. Anyway, so what happened was these women, without even realizing what was taking place, is they began to change and transform, and they started seeking out different foods. It was all because they reseeded their body with good microbes as opposed to bad. The good overtook the evil. That's why I like Romans 12, verse 21, do not be overcome by evil, but rather
overcome with good.
Yes, or what I was going to say is analogy, overcome evil, toxic yeast and fungus and parasites and toxic E. coli with good bacteria.
Yeah.
And so if you start doing stuff like that, and the other thing is, if is she there yet?
No, sir, she won't be here till next month. She's 7 months pregnant now.
Well, do you think you can kind of psychologically just get prepared to only having food that's going to be good for her in the house?
Oh, yes, sir.
So you don't give her any options. That's like a wife if she brings home Chips Ahoy cookies and Doritos. What's going to happen?
Look, I'm a Cajun chef, honey. I'm the one that...
Wait just a second. I need... Could you give me your GPS coordinates? I could probably find a way to make it over there for lunch today.
We tried to call you. We had a slab of salmon yesterday morning for breakfast.
How dare you bring that up?
Got with some sautéed okra and some fresh farm eggs.
No, I'm really, really serious. Where do you live?
In Kilgore. In Kilgore. My husband's the one that's had his neck broke twice, so be careful.
Oh, no. Bless his heart.
His low back crushed and all that.
Well, how's he doing now?
He's doing well.
So is he like you? Is he a little bit concerned about, you know, the daughter coming to live?
Not as much.
Not as much. So you feel pretty good about it, right?
Well, I wouldn't exactly say that.
But she needs help right now, doesn't she?
Yes, absolutely.
And so that's going to be the highest goal or common denominator that we're working with, is blessing and helping her.
Yes.
Right.
Gotcha.
Well, how do you suppose that E. coli got into my kidney?
Well, I can tell you 95% of the time it travels from the lower part of your digestive tract, meaning the rectal area, and it just works its way up. It's kind of like I have a little daughter still. And even though this is not anything that I'm comfortable with, I've heard my wife teach them, you wipe from front to back.
Anyway.
Right. But let me give you some ideas. What I want you to do is, and you're just going to have to take this with a grain of salt, because I can't prove it to you, but any time that there's E. coli, I would probably take coconut oil and just apply it to that area of the body. Just rub it, massage it in, and it will just, I mean, it's not going to soak in quickly. I mean, even if you put coconut oil on your, let's say on your forearm from just unexposure, and which is what people in other countries do. They constantly bathe their body in coconut oil to protect their skin from the damage of the sun. It's going to take a little while for it to kind of, quote, soak in and be absorbed, isn't it? But if you'll apply it to that area where the vaginal tissue is and where the urethra, I think you'll tell me it has a very good action at preventing E. coli from growing in your body. But then again, I think stress is probably what weakens you unless... See, your body treats alcohol more like sugar than it does anything else.
I know.
So I'm not trying to beat you up. You know I love you.
I know I love you too.
But so the E. coli could have easily come from you. It just migrated up and worked its way in because the conditions were right. Meaning, you just had. I mean, I'm the one person talking to you. I don't really get sick, except if I get severely emotionally stressed.
Well, let me tell you, a lady friend of ours bought me a nice blood pressure kit.
Mm-hmm.
And it started about last week. I started taking my blood pressure. It was sky high.
Well, doesn't that tell you that you got a little bit too much adrenaline coursing through your veins just about this?
Yes, sir. And I tell you what, the past 2 days, it has been absolutely normal.
Does that mean you're more peaceful now about the situation?
Yes, praise God.
Okay. Praise God is right. So you're gonna you sure you want to trust in him?
Oh yeah.
I'm joking. I didn't mean it that way.
I'm going to get some kefir grains and
if you'll do that, you can start giving that to your daughter. But if she's overweight, I mean,
yeah,
the little baby growing. Well, the baby growing inside of her right now is probably going to have a little bit of a tendency. What do you think? How about that? Yeah. Whatever mom is eating is what the baby's going.
Shucks, she called me yesterday, and I asked her what she had for supper, and she told me crabs, and I just, hush.
Well, I'm not going to say that was all that bad.
No kidding.
So she eats well when she eats that kind of stuff.
Well, let me ask you, was she taunting you she said that?
Of course.
Well, her mom told her that she had the salmon and okra and eggs for breakfast, so.
Yeah.
And so she countered with, well, I had boiled crabs, Mom and Dad. Yeah, she's got a real dark streak.
Oh, my goodness. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to
you. Welcome. I'm rooting for you. Be sure and drink lots of lemon water to kind of flush your kidneys, all right?
Yes, sir, and God bless you so
God
much.
Bless you. Thank you so much. Yes. Bye-bye.
Oh, what's your office number?
My phone number is 903-586-8114.
8114. Yes, ma'am. I would really want to come and visit you.
All right. You can if you bring okra.
Okay, that's good.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
All right, thanks, folks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, if you want to join me on the radio, there's plenty of time left. 903-586-5257. You can't tell me that lady didn't have quite a bit of stress. And so stress you want a way to cause dementia in a person? Long-term chronic stress will do it. Good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. Thanks for your call today.
You betcha. I have a daughter that has rheumatoid arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been taking Humira for several years now. And it's caused nerve damage.
Oh, bless her heart.
Yeah, they say that there's... I think they say there's white spots on her brain.
Mm-hmm.
And it's made her toes curl under.
Oh, yeah.
And they're saying that it's not reversible. And I was just wondering if maybe you knew something.
How old is she?
43, 44.
That means she's just a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Does she work?
Yeah.
Okay. What does she do for a living?
She's an office manager in a medical clinic.
Now, I promise you, I'm not trying to be ridiculous by the next question.
Yeah.
How much stress is she under? Does she handle stress real well?
Yeah, fairly well.
Okay. Well, let me just try to make it sound simple, because you asked a question, is it possible it's reversible? There is a book that I've talked about probably on three or four separate occasions that the name of it's called The Brain's Way of Healing by Dr. Norman Doidge. And it's very interesting. It talks about how you heal the brain, and I really like the information. So that may be one thing that she might look at. At the age 43, the quicker that we can get her onto the idea that she wants to rejuvenate and regenerate new brain tissues, the better this is going to go.
Uh-huh.
But I said to the person earlier, and I probably said it really, really, really quickly, so it probably didn't make great sense, but I mentioned cabbage.
Uh-huh.
I mentioned broccoli. I mentioned asparagus and greens and lettuces. These are probably one of the most perfect fuels from the carbohydrate kingdom to help the brain repair itself. So if she told me she's going to focus on eating vegetables that are low in starch and she's going to give up grains, then I would say, bingo, we've got a window of opportunity. But typically, sugar is the hardest thing on the brain that I know of. And maybe not much better is aspartame or Splenda.
Yeah.
If you want to take a person and just rip them to shreds, I think Splenda and aspartame can do that over a long period of time. But see, the brain is mainly, minus the water content of the brain, it's really made of fat and cholesterol. And so there's a diet that tries to promote more good, healthy fat. But if you lower the carbohydrate, your body will start producing what are called ketone bodies. And ketones are what heal and scrub the brain clean of plaque. If it were me, I would be giving her generous amounts of things like either cod liver oil or some type of fish oil. I would probably use a little bit of black currant seed oil and sesame seed oil just to help get rid of inflammation in the brain. I would sure consider an herb called turmeric. It's that saffron, yellow-colored spice.
Yeah, I like turmeric.
French's mustard. You like mustard?
Oh, yeah.
So those are things that I would look at doing, but between exercises and dietary changes and a few supplements, the most important of all those is going to be if she sets her mind like Flint that she wants to reverse that. But I don't even know how many cases of rheumatoid I've just seen go perfectly into remission and never come back. Just lots of them. But you know what? Sometimes with people, it's hard to convince them.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, some people can be. Usually the person that says to me, Dr. Morgan, I've had it up to here. I'm sick of this. I can't tolerate the drugs any longer. All they do is have side effects. See, it's easy for a person to say, let me start over here. There's so many books written on this topic. She can... If it wasn't possible to drive the rheumatoid into remission without the Humira, I wouldn't even waste your time talking about it. But I see it all the time.
Yeah.
And the truth is, I don't think it's that hard to do. You just have to find out, does she have a food allergy? If she's eating a food that's causing a disruption in her immune system, all we have to do is just avoid that food. If she's eating foods that would probably cause plaque formation in the brain, like sugar, I would try to build a compelling case to tell her to replace those with healthy foods that actually have the ability to rebuild her body so she can be in good working order.
All right. Is most of this in that book you're talking about?
Some of it is. Not all of it, but I mean, I can't even, I mean, these books are so easy to come by. If you were to get on a, I'm trying to think, what's the title of the book? It's it's a book on the brain. There's a brain on the cover. That doesn't help at all. Sorry. I'll think of the title and I'll tell you next week. Sorry.
Okay.
Isn't that horrible? I'm trying to teach you. I'm sorry.
What did you say the author's name was?
Well, his last name is Doige. I think it's Doidge.
Okay.
It's like Dodge, but there's an I after the O.
Okay.
Norman Doige is called The Brain's Way of Healing. I think he's written another book called The Brain That Heals Itself. But there's no book that's a panacea. I mean, I can easily pick and choose sections that I think are very valuable, and I can think of other ones that are probably, well, that's kind of impossible. But there are things, for example, there's a particular rice bran extract called IP6, and there's been plenty of studies to show that helps dissolve plaque that builds up in the brain. Now, I'm not trying to make this into a panacea conversation, but if it were me, I mean, rheumatoid is an autoimmune reaction. And so we're trying to make it very, very quiet, so we have to find out what the trigger is. You know, a lot of these cases that I see, they just have chronic low-grade infections and don't even know it. And that could be either viral, bacterial, fungal, or from the parasitic realm. And so a lot of times, I'm just a genius. You know how I'm a genius?
Ma'am,
please tell me, when did your fortunes turn for the better? Well, once I got rid of my low-grade infection, Dr. Morgan, that's when I feel like $1 million. I'm going, oh, I'm going to listen to her.
All right.
So, you sure are a good dad calling on behalf of your daughter.
Well, I listen to you quite a bit, and I know that some things are, you know, they say they're not reversible, and they are.
This one is, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, did I personally wish you a happy Father's Day back on Father's Day?
I think you might have got close.
Okay, well, happy Father's Day to you.
Well, to you too. And I sure do appreciate you.
Yeah, I appreciate you. You're a great dad, and pass all my love on to your daughter.
All right, and I'll check back then, will you?
Good deal. Thank you, sir. Bye-bye. All right.
Thank you. Bye.
You know, have you ever heard the phrase before that drastic times call for drastic measures? Oh, I believe that. And it's usually that person says, I've had it. They're the ones willing to go all in, hog wild to help themselves. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Doctor. I just got some blood work back from my doctor, and it shows in here that my thyroid peroxidase AB is 168.
Mm-hmm. You know what AB stands for?
No.
Antibodies.
Oh, okay. And it says Hashimoto's thyroiditis.
Yeah, so this is an autoimmune disease where your body is actually attacking itself.
Okay.
The gentleman that just called a while ago, I couldn't... Do you have your radio on?
No.
Okay. I'm just getting feedback. Are you on speakerphone?
No.
Okay, thank you. Sorry about that. Sometimes it's just a bad connection. So, the book I could not remember the title of, the same author has written a book about the thyroid, and one of the articles in the book says there is an 87% correlation to Hashimoto's thyroiditis and having a wheat intolerance. Is there any chance that you consume wheat?
Not since July of last year. I got off wheat and dairy because my grandson had to, and I wanted to help him.
Well, the first thing that I look at when thyroid antibodies are elevated, I always give what are called thyroid protomorphogens. Sometimes they're called PMGs, or protomorphogen glandular. And I think this is a brilliant, brilliant product. I think a bottle costs, what, $13-14. But to make a long story short, a protomorphogen, when you ingest it on an empty stomach, it will be absorbed in the bloodstream, and your immune system, instead of attacking your thyroid, will start going after this protomorphogen. It's like a decoy device. So it helps calm it down. So the more that I study this, I'm beginning to think that almost everything has a little bit of an autoimmune component. It's just a matter of what is the severity. Is this a mild case? Is it moderate? Or is it most severe? Which I'm telling you, that would be very discouraging to a person to have a severe Hashimoto's, because they would say, am I going to live? Can I ever make it out of bed again? So I don't know what level you have, but if your immune system is producing antibodies, we have to determine if you have some weakness in your thyroid that needs to be repaired. But a protomorphogen of the thyroid is one of the ways of going about doing that. And then the other thing is, you got to get rid of all the inflammation in the body. And so, you know what I wanted to talk about? I want to talk about the relationship between the flora that people have in their gut and autoimmune diseases. And so studies are pretty clear. The less inflammation you have in your digestive tract, in your gut, the more friendly flora and bacteria, the less autoimmune disease we have. Of course, the number one predictor of Hashimoto's is a very stressful emotional event has occurred in your life prior to the first flare of Hashimoto's. Is that true for you?
Yes.
Okay. There have been studies that show that vitamin D levels are really, really lagging when there's a flare-up of Hashimoto's. So, are you taking vitamin D?
I do. D3.
Good.
Is the one that I take by capsule.
Yeah, excellent.
And I try to get 15 minutes of sun a day.
Wait, where do you live? No, that's good.
And let's see, on the T3 and T4, what is all that? What is that?
Well, the reason they call it T3 is because the T stands for tyrosine. That's an amino acid.
Okay.
So thyroid hormones are made completely of proteins. So you need one molecule of the amino acid tyrosine, but the word the numeral 3 represents 3 molecules of iodine. So T3 just means there's one amino acid tyrosine and there's 3 molecules of iodine. T4 just means there's 4 molecules of iodine. Does that make sense?
Okay.
But T3, oh my word, that's the one that makes you feel really, really, really good. You know how I know that? Because when I do research on people that are addicted to drugs like alcoholism and, can I say crack cocaine, I have never even seen crack cocaine. I've had plenty of patients come into the office and they say they have to go to the bathroom, and I can see them when they're laying on their back. There's a hole in their nose because they're snorting coke. And I know that's not a pleasant topic, but I mean, it happens. And so whether it's alcohol or cocaine or other things, they literally, it increases T3 levels of the brain, so they feel good for a moment. But T3, when you produce optimal amounts of it, you feel really, really good, and your body's in much better repair. The thyroid has just a little bit to do with how your body converts food into energy and how you heal. Very, very important.
Okay, so about 4 years ago, my doctor put me on Armour Thyroid.
Mm-hmm.
30 milligrams a day.
Mm-hmm.
And we did blood work, and she said I could go down to 15 milligrams a day.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I've been doing for a couple of years now. And then I changed doctors and went to this one, and I get this report.
Do you know what 95% of the regulatory control of the thyroid is based on?
Oh.
Let me say that differently. The adrenal glands probably have about 95% of regulatory control over the thyroid. So it's not just the thyroid. We have to look to your adrenal glands also.
Okay.
Your adrenal glands actually make steroids for you. The last time I checked, if the adrenal glands produce steroids, you don't have inflammation and you feel really good.
Okay.
So you've got to prioritize what's the most important thing to take care of.
Adrenal glands first, and then
well,
the thyroid?
Well, I don't know that, but it depends. I mean, do you still feel, and I'm not digging you for information, but do you feel really stressed?
That's how I live my life, yes.
Okay, sorry. I've realized I'm just out of time. Sorry, call me next week and we'll pick it up, okay?
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.